is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Happy Friday. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Jumma Mubarak, whatever you, however you may say it. Happy Friday. Senator Sanders will be with us in the third hour of our program today. He's on a plane back to Vermont right now. And so at 2 o'clock Eastern time, if you're listening to us live, and, you know, roughly 2 hours from exactly right now, if you're not, we'll be talking with him. Bobby Kennedy Jr. is going to drop by at the bottom of this hour. He's got some interesting new information about vaccines, the Marisol, and this whole controversy, which we did a day on. Was it this week? Was it Monday this week, or was it last week? It was last Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, something like that. There's a bunch of stuff in the news. I'm just going to share some stories with you. The stuff that looks to me like these are the things that we need to know about, and that in many cases we need to do something about. And then we'll open our phone lines. It's Anything Goes Friday, right? So I'm going to do my Anything Goes here for a little riff here, a little bit. And then as our phone lines fill up, I'll just start bringing in callers, and you can bring your topic, whatever it may be. I know Bob in Oklahoma has already called about hemp. That was yesterday, so we can scratch that off the list. We'll see where this all goes. Bobby Jindal. I don't know if you saw this story. This was over in the Huffington Post, but it's an Associated Press story. They picked it up from the AP. Everyone knows how Ronald Reagan tripled our national debt, raised taxes on people making less than $50,000 a year 11 times, lowered taxes on people making over $1 million a year. I don't remember how many times, but a lot of times. And, started the process of creating a large national debt. And at first, when Reagan was doing this, I mean, Reagan's first idea was, based on Art Laffer, who we were laughing about yesterday, he was giving a speech here in Washington, D.C. It's like, why does anybody listen to these idiots? But in any case, Laffer came up with this theory that if you cut taxes, you'd increase government revenue. Sounded good. Sure, cut taxes and people will like Mitt Romney. They're not going to put that money in a Swiss bank account. They're not going to put it in a $100 million trust for their kids. Wait a minute. They already have? He already has? Mitt Romney already put $100 million in a trust for his kids? Oh, okay. And we have no idea how much he has in Swiss banks? In any case, what Art Laffer was saying and what Ronald Reagan was saying was that, billionaires like Mitt Romney are not going to just increase their savings or buy another house or build a car elevator. He built a car elevator? Oh, that's right. That they're not going to do that. What they're going to do is they're going to build a factory and put people to work. Because after all, that's what job creators do, right? Instead, people like Mitt Romney have been dismantling factories, shipping them overseas, making more profit, and putting that profit in Swiss banks, which, by the way, are now charging anywhere from 0.5% to 1% to hold your money. Negative interest rates. So anyhow, Reagan came up with this idea. It wasn't Reagan. It was the people around him. Reagan was just an actor. But the people around Reagan came up with this idea that if we cut taxes on rich people, it would raise government revenue. It didn't work. It dropped government revenue, or it hurt government revenue. Reagan was also jacking up government spending at the time with his Star Wars initiative, $3 trillion, which has still never done a thing that worked. So about halfway through his presidency, as it became obvious it wasn't working, and he had pretty much raised taxes on working people as much as he could before people would start screaming or figure out that what he was doing, the Republicans came up with a whole new story about why it was a good thing to do deficit spending. And this whole new story that the Republicans came up with was captured in the phrase that David Stockman shared with us and has become now part of the lexicon, which is starve the beast being government. So the rationale, they said, okay, we cut taxes on rich people, and we went from, when Reagan came into office, the national debt was about $800 billion, as I recall. It was less than a trillion. And Reagan took it up almost to $3 trillion in 8 years. No president outside of time of World War II, basically, or the Civil War, no president had ever run up that much debt, ever, in the history of the United States. Reagan ran up more debt in his 8 years than every president from Jimmy Carter all the way back to George Washington combined, if you pull out the years that we were involved in the two world wars. And we paid back those debts, by the way. So Reagan and his buddies were stuck. I mean, they were in this situation where, you know, hey, we got this trickle-down theory, and people are starting to say, you know, these guys are peeing on us and telling us it's raining. I mean, people are starting to figure out what a scam this is. We've got to figure out another way to sell this to Republicans. Now, we know, we Republicans, we know that most of our voters are white working class people, and many of them in the South, thanks to Nixon's very successful Southern strategy, pulling all those Democrats out of the racist white Democrats out of the Democratic Party, George Wallace's Democratic Party, what became Lyndon Johnson's Democratic Party, Lyndon Johnson of the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, and turning them into Republicans. So, you know, the Reagan guys, the Republicans, they looked around and they said, okay, we've got a bunch of white racists here. And as Lee Atwater pointed out back in 1980, he said, you know, back in the 60s, we used to say N-word, N-word, N-word. But you can't do that anymore to get those white voters to come along. And so we got a little more sophisticated. We started talking about forced busing, and everybody knew that we were talking about people of color. And he says, but then we got a little more sophisticated and figured out you don't even have to talk about that. You don't even have to talk about forced busing. You can simply say tax policy. And people figure out that you're talking about trying to screw black people. I mean, here's Lee Atwater saying this in his own words. Here he is.
You start out in 1954 by saying, by 1968, you can't say that hurts or backfires, so you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you're getting so abstract now, you're talking about cutting taxes, and all of these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and the byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. And subconsciously, maybe that is part of it. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that if it is getting that abstract and that coded, that we're doing away with the racial problem one way or the other. You follow me? Because obviously sitting around saying, we want to cut taxes, we want to cut this, and we want, is much more abstract than even the busing thing. And a hell of a lot more abstract than you know.
It's a hell of a lot more abstract than using the N-word. So, what the Reagan guys came out with was the reason. There's actually a reason why we're trying to increase the national debt. We're trying to increase the national debt to create a debt crisis so that when the Democrats come along, when they get into power, as they inevitably will, and Bill Clinton ultimately did, when the Democrats get to power, there'll be such a huge national debt that they won't be able to spend any more money. They won't be able to give any more money to black people. This was the code. Now, of course, most of the people in poverty in the United States are white, but it doesn't matter. Republicans play on white racist spheres with this. So Sam Brownback tried this in Kansas, and Bobby Jindal just tried this in Louisiana. And I got to tell you about what Bobby Jindal did. I'll do that in 5 minutes when we come back from the break. It's astonishing. And how much damage it's doing to Louisiana.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's like Reagan kneecapped America, and now you've got a bunch of Republican governors kneecapping their states. Why isn't anybody calling them out? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Sharon in Bellingham, Washington, listening to KBAI. Hey, Sharon, what's up?
Hi. My question's about Social Security, and I trust you as much as I trust Bernie. I thought I'd be able to ask Bernie, but if the Republicans do their shenanigans on Social Security, By the way, I turned 66 in 2016 when things could crash or whatever. But anyway, I'm just wondering if they do their shenanigans and change Social Security and privatize it and do all that stuff. I don't want them to do it to younger people either. But my question is it one of those things where it's going to affect everybody who's currently on it or really close to it? Or is it going to be one of those phase-in things? Do you have any clue about how that's going to work out?
I can virtually guarantee it'll be the latter rather than the former. But here's the thing. The cut to Social Security that the Republicans have already voted on and already put into the House rules, it's already a done deal. It just has to be executed, is not Social Security's retirement fund, which is what you're concerned about. It's the Social Security Disability Fund, which is used by people like my friend Michael Hutchison, who died this last year, but back a decade ago broke his neck when he was jogging and was paralyzed from the neck down. And he lived on Social Security disability. And the Social Security has one income stream, which is the payroll deduction, right? It's the payroll tax, which is split between employers and employees. But it has two expense categories. One is the disability fund, the other is the retirement fund. And at the end of every 2 years, every congressional session, if there is a shortfall in one or the other of those funds, and the shortfall has always happened in the disability fund, if that fund ends up the year, you know, 10, 20, 50, $100 million short, whatever it may be, I mean, there's a $1.6 trillion or $2.6 trillion right now in the Social Security fund. That is, you know, the money that's saved up because the baby boomers double taxed themselves starting in 1982, or maybe it was 83, and paid not just for the retirement of our parents' generation, but our own retirement. So there's all that money sitting there. And what Congress has done 11 times, including, you know, once under Reagan and twice under George W. Bush, is they simply say, okay, we'll just move some of the money out of the retirement fund and into the disability fund so we can continue writing checks. It doesn't hurt the retirement fund. It's got plenty of money. And it keeps the disability fund so they can write the checks. What the Republicans did at the beginning of the year is they passed a rule in the House of Representatives saying we will not allow ourselves to transfer money like that. So the disability fund is expected to run out of money sometime toward the end of next year. It'll be probably in the summer or fall of 2016. And when that happens, Congress has to authorize the transfer of money from the retirement fund to the disability fund. And that's when the Republicans are going to come out of the woodwork with probably a half a dozen different proposals to start privatizing, cutting whatever Social Security. And nobody really knows how they're going to do it. Nobody even knows if they're going to do it. I mean, this is, you know, they may be walking out on a plank. But as somebody who's concerned about Social Security retirement, Sharon, this is not something that you need to lose any sleep over. Your Social Security retirement will be just fine. And the one big thing that you could do is help out Senator Sanders. Bernie is the guy who started the Social Security coalition, caucus in Congress. So, Sharon, thank you for the call. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Okay, so here's the thing that I find so interesting. The Reagan guys... And David Stockman has written basically a book of apology about this. But the rest of them are not apologizing. And, you know, Steve Moore and Art Laffer and all these other guys, they're still running around promoting this stuff. The Reagan guys, when they figured out the trickle-down economics, the supply-side economics, the Reaganomics, the trickle-on, you know, whatever you want to call it, that didn't work. That theory that if we cut taxes on rich people, we'll get more income into the government. When they figured out that didn't work, that Art Laffer had just a harebrained idea and that it was a scam, they came up with a scam to hide the scam, right? In other words, they said, well, yeah, of course, we knew that it was going to run up a deficit. We wanted it to run up a deficit because by running up a deficit, we're going to create a situation where the Democrats can no longer play Santa Claus. They can no longer give stuff away. In fact, they're going to have to shoot Santa Claus. They're going to have to dial back on Social Security. They're going to have to dial back on Medicare. They're going to have to cut funding to education. We can privatize schools. We can start issuing school vouchers. We can bring the churches in. They'll help. They'll help the schools. We can always rely on them. You know, all this kind of stuff, right? It was a totally cynical ploy on the Republicans' part, on the Reaganites' part. They knew that their goal never was to, quote, starve the beast. They had been, you know, they actually believed beginning that government deficits were a bad thing. So they had to figure out a way to rationalize tripling the national debt in 8 years. And this was their rationale. Now, here's where the problem comes in. These guys sat around and said, okay, the American people are fairly stupid. They will buy this if we sell it right. So we're going to sell it. The way that we're going to sell it to them is, yeah, the job creators, they need even more tax cuts. And if it cuts revenue to the government, that's a good thing because it's going to starve the beast of government and thus the beast of the Democratic Party. But don't worry. It'll all work out in the end because we continue to believe that, you know, in supply side trickle down economics, that if you continue to cut taxes on rich people or refuse to raise taxes on them or on corporations, that eventually we'll have great prosperity. Everything will be wonderful. Now, the American people, or at least the Republicans, people who vote Republican, by and large, bought this crock and still repeat it. And you hear it, I mean, you hear it every day on hate radio. You hear it on Fox so-called news. But those people, I guarantee you, the guys on right-wing hate radio, you know, the Limbaugh with his $400 million contract or whatever it is, Hannity with his $200 million contract, these guys know that this is a lie. They know it's a scam. But apparently nobody bothered to tell Sam Brownback or Bobby Jindal, which is astonishing. So Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, wants to be president of the United States. He's not. He's part of the sideshow, right? He's just another freak in the Republican freak show. And this is what made him a freak, is that he did to Louisiana something similar to what Sam Brownback did in Kansas. Now, Brownback actually slashed. He said, you know, the Koch brothers, hey, it's a sub-S corporation, Koch Industries, or large chunks of it are. You don't have to pay any taxes at all to the state of Kansas. He exempted over 100,000 companies in Kansas from paying any state income tax. Plus, he dropped the top tax rate on rich people like the Koch brothers who live in Kansas. And what happened? His state is bankrupt. Or nearly. I mean, they've literally had their credit rating downgraded. So what does the Associated Press say is going on down in Louisiana now? Dateline Baton Rouge, Melinda Deslate, writing for the Associated Press. Year after year, Louisiana didn't have enough money to cover its expenses, yet Governor Bobby Jindal refused to roll back income tax cuts and refused to roll back his ever-increasing corporate tax breaks. He cut taxes on rich people in Louisiana. He cut taxes on corporations in Louisiana. He keeps doing it. Instead, he raided reserve funds and sold off state property. Now, this is not something from the Democratic Party. This is the Associated Press. Jindal suggested job growth from his economic development wins would replenish those assets once the recession ended. It hasn't. Now the Republican is running out of short-term patches and is struggling to plug a $1.6 billion budget hole just as he tries to build support for a possible 2016 presidential win. What is he going to cut? Higher education? Healthcare services? This is what the state treasurer, John Kennedy, who is a Republican, of Louisiana said, quote, "They've used all the smoke that was in the can and all the mirrors that they could buy, and now they're out of tricks. Their solution is to gut higher education like a fish." That's the Republican. They're going to dial back on, they're going to cut funding for railroad crossing safety, artificial reef construction, which protects the coastline, housing programs, and the blind. This is Bobby Jindal's solution. instead of stopping his or rolling back his tax cuts to the rich people, oh, let's just cut funding for blind people. The governor has successfully trimmed some spending by cutting more than 30,000 full-time state employees. Eh, just fire them. Yeah, unemployment will go up a little bit, but who cares? They were government workers. He privatized much of the Medicaid program, and he turned over the state's charity hospitals to outside managers. Brilliant.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So that's the first in my stack of about 16 things I wanted to share with you today. But, it's Anything Goes Friday, so we'll pick up your phone calls right after the break. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Bobby Kennedy Jr. is going to be with us sometime in the next 5 or 10 minutes. And is perfectly willing to take your calls, by the way. He's going to come on, and we're going to talk about the Marisol and vaccines and autism and all that stuff that is apparently forbidden to discuss in the mainstream media outside of just ridiculing anybody who asks, are there any questions here that have not yet been answered? And he's got some pretty startling information to share with us. So, if you have a vaccine, the Marisol, MMR, whatever, question, comment, feel free to call in and get in line if you want to talk with Bobby Kennedy. But as I said, we will pick up your calls. Dan in Great Lakes, Illinois. Hey, Dan, what's up? Thanks for listening to CPT.
Hello, Tom. Once again, God bless you for the work that you do.
Thank you, sir.
I'm glad that you touched on the idea how that white America has been bamboozled. I'm a 50-year-old African-American male, and simply through observation and my own life's experiences, all of this could be solved if white people would very simply stop voting their interests away. They make up the largest part of the population, according to the 2010 census. They've just been fooled to vote for moneyed interest. Now, to the issue of moneyed interest, I will say this. My wife and I have gone from having less than nothing when we first got married to having a few dollars past our monthly bills. And now when the market does well, we'll do okay. I'm a civil servant, and so is she. But what I've noticed about myself over these years is our accounts and our collective balances have increased, is that in myself, there has been an ever so subtle creeping compulsion to watch or pay attention to our money. And we are nowhere near rich. And I said that to say that I think that there are those among us who are the wealthiest within our society with whom this very similar compulsion has developed into something much more severe, what I will call sociopathic antisocial behavior. There's a psychosis here. You get to a point to where you have more money than you need to live your life. These people are only sweeping the money into a corner for themselves. There's no money in society for people to simply pay the rent. And they're talking about no health care, no unemployment, and the rest. Tom, your thoughts?
I think you're absolutely right, Dan. I have observed the same behavior in myself over the years, and I think it's an absolutely normal human thing. Money represents security in our society, tragically. It shouldn't, but it does, and among other things. And I would add, and I've not only said this, but I've written about it. I wrote about it in two of my books, The Crash of 2016 and Threshold. I believe that what we're seeing in the case of some of these billionaires is actually a form of obsessive compulsive disorder. Their obsession and their compulsion is money. And so it doesn't matter how much they have to have more because they're OC. When normal people have this and what they're stacking up around the house are newspapers and old empty tin cans, we call it a hoarding syndrome. If they're billionaires, they do the exact same thing, only instead of, filling their living room with newspapers, they fill the checking account with money. It's the Scrooge McDuck money bin syndrome. But I think you're spot on, Dan. Very, very, very well said. Thank you for the call. I got to run here. Bobby Kennedy's on the line. Environmentalist, attorney, author. His latest book, The Marisol, Let the Science Speak. And the website, ringoffireradio.com. Bobby, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. I understand that there is now a guy who works for the Food and Drug Administration, which licenses and oversees the safety of vaccines in the United States, who has attempted to get whistleblower status around these issues that you've been writing about. And let's first just clear the deck by saying neither you nor I nor anybody in our families, to the best of my knowledge, is opposed to vaccination. In fact, all of our kids are vaccinated. We're vaccinated. What we're opposed to is
mercury.
Yeah, exactly. Mercury in the vaccine. So let me toss it to you, Bobby.
Tom, as you know, I've always been fiercely pro-vaccine. I had all six of my kids vaccinated. I believe that vaccines have saved the lives of hundreds of millions of human beings over the past century. I'm deeply frightened of infectious diseases and their impacts on human beings. I want to have maximum coverage for our vaccines. And that's why that's one of the reasons I feel so strongly about these issues, because I don't think people will vaccinate if they have doubts about the safety of vaccines. And as long as we have mercury in some of the vaccines, as we do in the flu vaccine, people are not going to trust what CDC says. Now, as you know, I did a meta review of all the science out there on vaccines, which is called Vimerosal, Let the Science Speak. And there we found hundreds and hundreds of peer-reviewed publications by CDC, by FDA, by the leading university hospitals, published in the leading peer-reviewed publications. And virtually all of them, all of the scientific studies without exception, say that thimerosal is a deadly brain poison, that it is more deadly than the methylmercury in fish to brain tissue, and it's more persistent in the body, et cetera, and that it's almost certainly responsible for this epidemic of neurological problems that we're seeing in this generation of American children, ADD, ADHD, hyperactivity disorder, tics, misery index, speech delay, language delay, et cetera. So the CDC has leaned on three studies which it created hastily in the early part of the 2000s, and they're epidemiological studies which are easily manipulated, to exculpate thimerosal and to be able to claim that it's safe. One of the studies has already been disavowed by its author, Thomas Verstraeten, and these are the only studies on American populations ever. And the other two studies were written by a guy called Bill Thompson, who is a 16-year veteran at CDC's Immunology Safety Office. And he's still at CDC. He has now got an attorney, and he's with Rick Morgan of Morgan Furcamp in Cincinnati, which is a specialist on whistleblowers. And he has applied for whistleblower status, and he's asked to testify before Congress, because what he says is that on the two studies, the only two studies that indicate that thimerosal in particular populations didn't cause these kind of neurological injuries, that he cheated on those studies, that he was ordered by his superiors at CDC, including, and he names the names, Frank DiStefano, who is the head of the Vaccine Safety Division, and Maureen Doyle, who's the head of the branch, that he's been ordered for 10 years, he and his fellow scientists, to lie on the science. And Tom, I wish that you could, there's links actually in the article that we put up on Ring of Fire yesterday, mm-hmm, that are video links of him speaking. And the stuff he's saying is really, it's an atomic bomb, because what it says is that this agency, which is the agency that we've all trusted to keep vaccines safe, has actually been lying about its science and deliberately deceiving the American public about its science. What he says is that one of the things he says on these tapes, and maybe I can come back at another time and we can actually play the tapes,
sure,
on the air, is he says that his studies show that thimerosal certainly causes tics, which is a grave neurological injury. Tourette's syndrome, it's a family of disease that includes Tourette's syndrome. And that the data on that is so certain that he can say with certainty that it causes tics, which is one of the features of autism. And he says, therefore, and this is something I stayed away from in my book, but now he's saying it publicly, and he is the senior scientist at CDC. he's saying that there's biologic, this is a quote, plausibility to say that thimerosal causes autism-like features. He is the author of another publication in 2004, a third one, where he is the lead author of, where he was, says that he was forced to bury data that showed that these vaccines cause autism in African-American boys. And again, it's an epidemiological study that looks at certain populations. But that data came out that they couldn't bury it, and he was asked to essentially dispose of it. So the things he's saying are earth-shaking. He's given thousands of pages of damning documents to Congressman Bill Posey, who's on the Health Committee. And Posey is now working with Lamar Smith and trying to figure out the proper committee or somebody who will hold a hearing on this where he can subpoena Thompson.
That's remarkable. That's absolutely remarkable. We had last week we did basically 3 hours, I think, on this topic. And there are actually on hold there right now. There's a couple of people who want to get on with you. We have hard breaks in our program. We're going to hit a break in about a minute and a half, but then we can continue to talk and then we'll hit another break. But apparently one of the scientists who is quoted by the anti-thimerosal or even the anti, there is a kind of an anti-vaccine crowd out there, which you and I are not part of, has been pretty badly discredited. When we come back from the break, I'd like you to address that, and we'll pick up some phone calls. And in the meantime, I'm going to get this article over to Shano. Maybe we can pull some of these clips that we could use today. If not today, we can certainly do it next week. So hang on. We'll be right back. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is with us, ringoffireradio.com, where you can read his new article. And his book, of course, Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Bobby's book, Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak. You can read about it at ringoffireradio.com. We'll have a link at TomHartman.com as well. Okay, welcome back. And Shane, I just forwarded you the article. Bobby, you're still here with us?
Yeah.
Okay, let's pick up a couple of phone calls and then we can continue. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Jim in Caldwell, Idaho, you are on the air with Bobby Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Yeah. I'm kind of worried about the vaccines and stuff like that. I'm not really paranoid or anything like that, but I've seen the movie Divergent. And through drugs and stuff like that, that's another way of controlling a population, a certain, demographic people. I myself, I take that drugs in a certain form are good for people to help prevent disease. But, you got to be really careful about things like that, because I'm personally anti-government, and anytime the government gets involved in something like that, they like to put a little additive or something in it.
Jim, let's let Bobby respond to this. Bobby, I think that Jim represents part of that niche of people who don't like vaccines. In his case, because the government has something to do with it. How do we, A, your response to that, and B, how do we help in the public mind separate, for example, Jim's perspective from yours?
Well, I'm pro-vaccine. I think we need a strong, transparent government agency that is doing transparent science, that is spending a lot of resources on the science to make sure the vaccine program is safe. I don't think there's any question that vaccines have, in terms of epidemic diseases like polio and tuberculosis and diphtheria, diseases that killed millions and millions of people. I think 18 million people died in the flu epidemic, the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918. But So to me, there's no question that vaccines are important, and we need a really strong and we need a really transparent government agency that's supposed to administer them. I don't think that we should make vaccines mandatory. I think that, you know, people ought to, the program that we have now, I think, works, where people who have good reasons for not doing vaccines, taking vaccines, can get exemptions. And there are people, particularly some vaccines, Thompson's studies are showing that some vaccines cause injuries, and that there are certain vulnerable subsets of the population that are susceptible to those injuries, and they ought to be able to not vaccinate.
Yeah, but you realize rail that is. I mean, Chris Christie said that in London, and he's probably lost his presidential ambitions over that.
Wait, what did you say?
I'll repeat it when we come back. Hang on just a second. Our commercial stations are going to rejoin us. We're talking with Bobby Kennedy Jr., Ring of Fire Radio, for his most recent piece on thimerosal and vaccines. We'll be right back. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on the line with us. Ring of Fire Radio, the website. He's the author of Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak. He's got a new article about that over at ringoffireradio.com. We'll have a link to it from tomhartman.com. Bobby, we just got the clips from your piece. I can play a couple of them if you'd like.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Okay, cool.
This is Bill Thompson.
Okay.
Who is the 16-year senior scientist still employed by CDC.
Okay, here's what he had to say. It's taking a second.
It's the only vaccine that's still in is for pregnant women. I can say confidently, I do think thimerosal causes ticks. So I don't know why they still give it to pregnant women. Like, that's the last person I would give mercury to. Thimerosal from vaccines cause ticks. You start a campaign and you just make that your mantra. Do you think a pregnant mother would want to take a vaccine that they knew caused ticks?
No,
absolutely
no.
Not. I would never give my wife a vaccine that I thought caused ticks. I can say ticks are four times more prevalent in kids with autism.
Right.
There is biologic plausibility right now to say that thimerosal causes autism-like features.
So this fellow, Bobby, is the leading scientist at CDC?
He is a senior scientist at CDC, and he's been there for 60 years. 16 years. He's probably has the most expertise of anybody on that staff in epidemiology.
Amazing. Amazing. Shall we pick up some more phone calls here? I got a whole bunch of them for you.
Sure.
All right.
You know, one of the things I'd like to say,
sure,
in answer to, I think it was Jeff who called from Idaho,
mm-hmm,
is that I think the people who are truly anti-vaccine that's a fairly small group. And the latest CDC data show that vaccine rates in this country have not dropped. In fact, they've stayed over 91%, including in California. And so, you know, we are getting the people who are truly just anti-vaccine, and a lot of those are people who have religious exemptions like the Amish. But I think what the industry likes, Big Pharma is a $1 trillion industry. This is one of their most profitable sectors. When CDC mandates a vaccine, it's usually a guaranteed $1 billion profit for the pharmaceutical company, and it is, and the people who, there's been a series of congressional studies and Senate studies and inspector general studies that have criticized CDC for allowing vaccine maker compromised scientists to sit on the boards that decide which vaccines to approve. For example, Dr. Paul Offit, who has reportedly made millions and millions of dollars on the rotavirus vaccine, which he holds the patent to. He sat on the panel that approved the rotavirus vaccine for essentially mandated public use as part of the vaccine schedule.
Wow.
So, and on virtually all of the committees, what the Inspector General report and what the Congressional report by the Government Reform Committee found is that on virtually all the committees that approve these vaccines, there are sitting 80 or 90% of the people who sit on those committees have really catastrophic conflicts of interest, where they're getting money from the vaccine makers who stand to make billions of dollars of profits on these vaccines.
So we're looking at regulatory capture here.
This is the poster child. CDC's vaccine program is the poster child for regulatory capture, and this is a guaranteed profit for the industry. And not only that, Tom, but what they've succeeded in doing, because of the power of Big Pharma, is they've succeeded in making it impossible for people who are injured by vaccines to sue the vaccine maker or the doctor or anybody who gave it to them. So they have complete immunity from any consequence to their behavior. So they can put the thimerosal in the vaccine, and you know, the Congress in the Homeland Security Bill in the Patriot Act, Bill Frist and members of the Bush administration inserted a provision called the Eli Lilly Rider that made it illegal for anybody to sue CDC for injuries caused by thimerosal. So a lot of times you'll hear, you know, this talking point that you hear repeated again and again in the press that nobody's been injured by vaccines, but there's a vaccine court that looks at injuries. You know, you can't go to regular court. You have to go to the vaccine court if your child's injured or killed. There's been, the vaccine court over the past couple of years has recognized that 108 people have died from the MMR vaccine, which doesn't include thimerosal, but around between 3,000 and 4,500 people a year are compensated for injuries, and some of them devastating brain damage caused by vaccines. Now, this doesn't mean that most people are. Most people aren't. There's a very tiny percentage of the population. But to say that there is no danger is just demonstrably not true. And there are certain vulnerable subsets, and particularly there are people who are vulnerable to mercury. And those people should not be given mercury. None of us should be given mercury. We don't need the mercury in the vaccines. They took it out of the pediatric vaccines. They should take it out of the flu vaccine. But instead, they're giving flu vaccines to pregnant women that are loaded with mercury.
Right, which makes no sense. Which makes no sense at all. We have about 45 seconds before we're going to hit the break at the top of the hour, Bobby. Would you like to stick around into the next hour and take phone calls and continue this conversation?
Sure.
Okay. And just very quickly, in the last break, you had said something about being in favor of voluntary vaccination. Chris Christie said that when he was, you know, that it should be up to parents to choose when he was in the UK. He's since walked it back because that nearly destroyed his presidential ambitions. What did you mean?
Well, I don't think, the vaccine is a medical intervention. And I don't think that as a, you know, as a nation, as a democracy that is, you know, that is supposed to be based on individual liberties, we have to have a balance. And, you know, you've got to give people who have a good reason not to get vaccinated, you've got to give them an out. And what we need to do is we need to strengthen the credibility of the regulatory agencies.
Yeah.
We already have ways
I'm
of
with
telling
you.
People
we will continue this conversation in just a few minutes. Bobby Kennedy Jr. with us. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Just a quick heads up, our hour-long national town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie, that we've been having every Friday on this program for 10 years now, will be next hour. Bernie's on an airplane on his way up to Vermont right now. In fact, he's probably landing right about now. And he will be coming on at the top of the next hour. So stick around for 55 minutes if you have questions for Bernie. Right now, Bobby Kennedy Jr. is on the line with us. He is the environmentalist, attorney, author of numerous things, including his latest book, Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak, and his website, robertfkennedyjr.com.
My website is the Ring of Fire website.
Oh, Ring of Fire, excuse me, yeah. ringofireradio.com. Thank you very much. My apologies. And so, Bobby, I've got literally right now, I got calls from California, Illinois, Texas, Florida, West Virginia, Washington State, Oregon, Texas, and Wisconsin, all wanting to talk to you about vaccines. You want to just do a quick recap of this article that you've published over at ringofireradio.com, and then we can pick up these calls?
Sure. The recap is that a 16-year veteran CDC scientist, named Bill Thompson, still working at CDC, has essentially filed for whistleblower status. He's hired attorneys and invoked the protection of the whistleblower, the federal whistleblower statute, saying that, and he's the primary author of the only two studies left standing that try to claim that thimerosal is not damaging to children's brains. And he now says that his superiors at CDC forced him to bury data, alter data, and lie on those studies.
And we played a clip of him.
And he wants to testify in front of Congress, and he has handed thousands of documents over to Congressman Bill Posey on the Health Committee.
Right. And we played a clip of that in the last hour. We can play that or others if you'd like. Let's pick up some phone calls and see where this goes, okay? Joey in Lake Elsinore, California. You are on the air with Bobby Kennedy.
Tom, this is Joe from Lake Elsinore. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Mr. Kennedy, what a privilege it is to speak with you. I oftentimes show my son a picture of you as the procession passes by and myself at the same age, and it's amazing. What a privilege. I firmly affirm what you're saying. I have two kids that are both born prematurely, and they were both given the RSV vaccination. Early on, I had no choice, but we did it. And we've since been vaccinating our kids. But I've been insistent that we do the individual dose on the flu vaccine because of the thimerosal. It's sometimes a delay of maybe 3 months before it actually gets issued. But if you wait, you can get pediatric dosages as opposed to the batch. Now, as you've quoted, there's a whistleblower status. They've known about this for years. That fund was established specifically to address that. I didn't realize that the Eli Lilly component became a factor, but I think Tom mentioned about the bird flu. They were trying to get immunizations for that. The damages that are caused by flu vaccinations, by childhood immunizations, are all related to the additives so that they can continue to profit at the same time disregard the effects that have occurred. I wouldn't say that there are millions, but there are probably close to a million people that have been affected by immunizations. And, you know, I think they weigh this view of the greater good, but, you know, if that's your child that's affected by that, then I don't think you can really
Joey,
that argument.
Joey, well said. Let's let Bobby respond to this, please. Thank you.
Well, you know, the sad part about it is that they, in 1999, CDC and FDA did a series of studies in the 90s that showed that vaccines, that thimerosal was causing all of these injuries to children. There's a fantastic movie that's about to be released that goes through all this kind of sausage making at CDC. And it was made parallel to while I was writing my book, and I worked with the creators of this movie, and it's called Trace Amounts, and I would urge you to watch that movie. You cannot watch that movie. When we showed it in Los Angeles, the press came into that movie hostile, skeptical, angry at me. Virtually every one of them left saying, I'm convinced. They can see what CDC said. This is about government corruption. The sad part is that FDA, in 1998, having studied Thimerosal exhaustively, ordered Thimerosal out of all over-the-counter medicines. It was in hundreds of over-the-counter medicines. For example, murine eye drops were, you know, mercury thimerosal-based, and they found out that they were blinding people. Mercurochrome, which we used to rub on ourselves when we were kids, when we were cut, it was that red antiseptic. It was in that. So, and it was in hundreds of others, and FDA said, you got to get it out. It was illegalized for use in animals back in the 1940s. So, and CDC recommended that it be removed from all vaccines in 1999. So that the industry began doing that. It didn't force them to recall the thimerosal, but it, and so they continued to use it until 2003, but by then they removed it from all the pediatric vaccines. Unfortunately, and really bewilderingly, CDC that same year, 2003, mandated or put added flu vaccines to the pediatric schedule. And the flu vaccines were thimerosal flu vaccines. So while they took it out of the pediatric vaccines, they added it to the flu vaccines in almost the same concentrations
as a maternal vaccine.
Vaccines combined. So kids today can get this virtually the same exposures that they were getting before they removed it from the pediatric vaccines. And worst of all, they're now giving it to pregnant women for the first time. And even the companies have said to CDC, we can remove this. We can produce 100% of the vaccine thimerosal free. But CDC, because of money, won't do it.
Wow. That's quite the indictment. Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, you're on the air with Bobby Kennedy, Jr.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Kennedy. A pleasure to speak with you, and always a pleasure to speak with Tom.
Thank you.
Yes, I wanted to say that hopefully, now that the truth is coming out, the mainstream media can stop what they're doing as far as bamboozling the American people. For instance, the preservative-free version of the flu vaccine, it's supposed to be preservative-free, but it still contains trace amounts of thimerosal, and they're still giving it to babies, children, and pregnant women. That's Merck that has the patent on the MMR vaccine. The scientific evidence has shown that it's best to take those vaccines separately, single-dose vaccines. But Merck doesn't want to do it because of company profits. Mr. Kennedy, I hope that you can go to the Congress of the United States and reveal the truth to the American people that these vaccines actually do cause autism. They have the
Wayne, we have just a minute left before the break. Let's let Bobby respond to your comments.
Well, okay. You know, I think you're right about that. And what you're saying, it shows that, you know, if you look at the talking point, the first thing you said about the press, the mainstream press is impenetrable on this issue. They absolutely, it is Kafkaesque. No matter what kind of science you show them, they will not read it. None of them have read the science. They're taking the word of CDC bureaucrats who are badly compromised for what the science says. But they will dutifully repeat and parrot the talking points of CDC. They'll say, oh, well, this is ethylmercury, and it's not toxic like the methylmercury in fish. There's good mercury and bad mercury. That's completely been debunked. But they'll repeat that, or they'll say there's no such thing as an autism epidemic. And all these things that Americans know to be untrue because they've actually read the science, and that's why you see that the vaccine rates are lower in educated neighborhoods, because these are people who have actually gone on the internet. You go to the public health sites, and the science is there.
We'll be right back with more of Bobby Kennedy Jr. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Bobby, I'm assuming you can stick around, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Hang on just a second. And welcome back. Bobby, for the next 4 minutes, our commercial stations are in commercial break. which represents about half our audience. The other half of our audience is Pacifica stations and Free Speech TV, and they are all with us right now. So we're still on the air. We're still talking live to them, and we'll pick up calls from Free Speech TV during this 4 minutes, if that's all right with you.
Okay.
Okay. Anita in San Antonio, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You are on the air with Bobby Kennedy, Jr.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Kennedy.
Hi.
Yeah, I think it's totally irresponsible, the kind of mixed signals that you guys are giving about vaccines. And I don't think we can claim to be the party of science when we deny science when it comes to vaccines. Now, I know you say that you have your own science, but I listened to the hearing Elizabeth Warren had, and they addressed some of these questions. And with the lead researcher from the CDC, and I think it would have been more appropriate, Mr. Hartman, if you would have had Mr. Kennedy on with maybe somebody who represented them, or maybe the lead researcher from the CDC or somebody who represented them.
Oh, can I answer that?
Go for it.
I would so love for that to happen. There is nobody at CDC who will debate me publicly. There is nobody in the vaccine industry that will debate me publicly. There is no TV show that will let me on to debate these people. I would like to ask them to show me a single science. It's not that I have my science and they have their science. I want to see what their science is. We spent over $200,000, myself, Harvard medical school professor, Martha Herbert, Mark Hyman, 8 times New York Times bestseller. When we wrote our book, we spent 3 years, over $200,000. We had a research team of 12 people. They went out and they into all of the scientific literature, and our job was not to cherry pick science, but to find every scientific study that's ever been done on dimerosal. And we could not, and we found over 500 studies, 1,400 references. They're all in my book. We could not find a single legitimate study other than the 3 epidemiological studies that were done by CDC, which have now all been disavowed. There are hundreds and hundreds of studies out there. They all say the same thing, that thimerosal is more persistent in the body than methylmercury, that it's more toxic to the brain, that it metabolizes into organic mercury faster, that it does cause these neurological injuries in animals and hamsters and guinea pigs and fish and cows and goats and pheasants and pigs, and that it causes it in human beings. So we have all this data. They don't have anything. What they say is, this is what the science says. But then when you say, okay, can you tell me a study? They can't give you one.
Anita, if I could add, because we're going to hit a break in just a second here. Bobby and I are not saying vaccines are bad or don't vaccinate. We're saying
but you can't say you should vaccinate, but oh my God, all these terrible things happen to kids that are vaccinated.
You can ask for vaccines that don't have thimerosal in them.
Exactly.
I did this
there's a version
2 months ago.
Of every vaccine that doesn't have thimerosal.
Yeah, 3 months ago, whenever it was, when the flu shots were being hyped, I stopped at the CVS pharmacy and went in and said, hey, can I get a thimerosal-free flu shot? And the woman was like, yeah, that's the single-dose shots. They're preservative-free. The multiple-dose shots, they have a preservative in them because every time you use them, you introduce room air into them, so they have to have thimerosal. So I said, you know, does it cost a little more? Yeah, it's an extra $10 or something for the single dose. I took it. So I got a vaccine without thimerosal in it. That's what we're talking about, Anita. We're not saying don't vaccinate yourself or your kids. We'll be back. Welcome back, Tom Harbin and Bobby Kennedy Jr. on the line with us, talking about thimerosal and vaccines and all this sort of stuff. Bobby's got a new article over at ringoffireradio.com. And there'll be a link to it at tomhartman.com, and we'll have a link in our newsletter tonight as well. Bobby, I continue to pick up phone calls?
Yeah.
Okay. Sharon in Occidental, California, you're on the air with Bobby Kennedy, Jr.
Thanks for taking my call. This is a real honor. This vaccine debate in the last couple of weeks, I've kind of gotten interested in it, and I'm older, and my instinct is to say, polio bad, vaccines good. And so I started investigating this, kind of pretending as if I was the mother of a newborn baby. And I'm willing to be convinced. And I went to the CDC website, and I see that they're recommending that a 2-month-old baby be vaccinated against 10 diseases in one office visit. And I remember you, Tom, talking about how you had gotten a vaccine and it turned your entire arm black.
Yeah, that was pretty nasty. That was to go into Central Africa. That was like yellow fever and dengue fever or something like that.
Right, but that's the principle of vaccines. They make you a little bit sick, and they build your immunity. But it violates my common sense that they want to give a two-month-old baby a little bit of diphtheria, a little bit of whooping cough, a little bit of rotavirus 1, a little bit of 2, 3, all the way up to 10 diseases in one day. And that really just violates my common sense. And when my common sense is violated, there's got to be strong science that I can read and believe in order to go with what they're recommending. And so I go to the CDC website, and I find that they have a paid thing, are multiple vaccines safe? And they talk about it, oh, yes, we've done research, multiple vaccines are safe. And then they say, but then all the references are from papers done in 1991 to 1998. But they've doubled the number of vaccines they now require kids to get at the age of 2 months. And this really just violates my common sense. And
Sharon, let's let Bobby respond to that. We've kind of Sharon has moved us out of the Marisol and into these multi-vaccine. Let's even say that there's no Thimerosal. Is that a concern, Bobby?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert on vaccines. Like I said, I vaccinated my children. I believe that vaccines work. I think that, you know, I think that that what she is doing is the right thing, which is to go and look at the science herself. And you know, and listen to CDC, listen to the government agencies, but I really have no comment on it because I know very little about vaccines. What I know a lot about is mercury. And
yeah.
I know that mercury and human brain tissue should not ever be together.
Yeah, there you go. Jennifer in Bellingham, Washington, you're on the air with Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, thank you for taking my phone call, Tom. And Mr. Kennedy, I really appreciate all the work you've done on this topic. When my son was 5 and was getting his shots for school, he had his DPT shot and 8 days later had a grand mal seizure. The physician told me it wasn't possible that it had anything to do with his vaccine. And I had a strong feeling that it did. And I believe the paperwork where you sign the waiver that says you won't hold them responsible says, you know, reactions within 7 days. So this is one day past that. And it just made me wonder if maybe, and I'm sure it wasn't reported then to the CDC as a reaction to the vaccine. And I'm just wondering if there aren't more people who had reactions that weren't reported to the CDC.
Yeah, that raises an interesting question, Jennifer. Bobby, we had one of our kids had a really severe reaction to MMR. And, you know, Louise to this day is convinced that there was some lasting consequence to that. I don't know. But we never reported it to anybody other than our pediatrician who said, don't worry, he'll be fine.
CDC, the vaccine courts give awards of between 3,000 and 4,500 Americans every year who have been injured by vaccines. CDC estimates that that's from 1% to 10% of the total of people who had vaccine reactions. So that's just what CDC says. But again, you know, my expertise is on mercury and not on vaccines in general, and I recommend people get vaccines.
Right. And this is the point that has to be made repeatedly, I think. How much time do we have, Shana? Got about a minute and a half. Okay. Quick question here. Ken in Inwood, West Virginia, you're on the air with Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, God bless Mr. Kennedy for your work in this field. Regarding my child, we were a foster family, and we were obligated by the state that we wanted to go one by one. We did our research on all the vaccinations, and we took her to the state pediatrician and said, "Oh, here's the one shot with 7 viruses in it, but she'll be okay." and we were very adamant, but since we were only, you know, we were only a foster family, we didn't have full control. So he gave it to her, and it wasn't about 2 hours later, she got a 104-degree fever and had massive seizures. And she was like that for a whole year, where she was developmentally, when her 4 month shot, she was starting to go, you know, crawl and do all the things that a 4 or 6 month-old would do. And now she can barely talk, barely walk, and she's 4 now. So it's, you know, I'm sorry, it's a little bit emotional for me, but, you know, we adopted her. She's ours now, and we're doing anything we can. And if you do go to DC, I would love to find out a way where I can be there in the audience with our child and show those guys, you know, what these things can do to children.
Bobby, your thoughts?
Oh, thanks for that story.
Yeah, this is, Ken's story. These are the kind of folks who should show up at the vaccine courts. Is that right?
Yeah, that is definitely. I mean, there's no other option. You can't sue anybody with, you know, they have complete immunity. The vaccine makers,
right,
have complete immunity.
Bobby, we're hitting a news break here, 6 minute newscast at the bottom of the hour. If you'd like to stick around and take some more calls, you're more than welcome to.
Sure.
Okay, great. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. with us. ringoffireradio.com. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be back. Keep in mind, we're talking here about mercury. It happens to be in vaccines, but it's about mercury. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Bobby Kennedy Jr. on the line with us. ringoffireradio.com, the website. The environmentalist attorney and author, his latest book, Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak. And Bobby, a quick recap of what we've been talking about here.
A 16-year veteran researcher and senior scientist at CDC has now gone whistleblower and asked for protection under the federal whistleblower statute, saying that he deceived the public and under orders from CDC and buried data, damning data, about the toxicity of thimerosal and its impacts on human beings. When he published he's the author of 2 of the 3 studies that CDC has pointed to in order to exculpate thimerosal from this epidemic of neurological disorders in American children. And the first study was already discredited, the Verstraten study, by its own author. He is now coming out and saying those studies were tampered with and are not valid.
Right. And once again, this is not an indictment of vaccines. This is an indictment of a mercury-based preservative put in vaccines. And it's
exactly. And it's not in all vaccines, but it is in the flu vaccine. And people who get the flu vaccine should definitely be asking for the thimerosal-free version. In fact, any vaccine that you get, you should always check whether it's thimerosal-free. Every vaccine that's made, there is a thimerosal-free version of it. Some of those have trace amounts of thimerosal, but you're not getting the huge bolus doses of, you know, 12 or 25 micrograms that you would get from the flu vaccine.
Right. Okay. So let's pick up some calls on this. Dixie in Nehalem, Oregon. Am I saying that right, Dixie?
Yes, Nehalem, Oregon.
You're on the air with Bobby.
Yes. Hello, Tom, and hello, Mr. Kennedy. You wanted to talk about mercury, so I have this little article here. There's other things I have to say, but I'll stick to mercury. I'll read it to you just a little bit. It says, contrary to the assertions of Oz, Hyman, and Kennedy, is that you?
Yes.
That Kennedy? Thimerosal has not been removed from childhood vaccinations. It's still there. The FDA changed the rules so vaccine manufacturers do not have to include thimerosal on the label as an ingredient unless it is used as a preservative. According to the FDA, if thimerosal is used in the manufacturing process but it is not used as a preservative, the vaccine can be labeled thimerosal-free when that is not the case.
That's what the earlier caller was pointing out, is that some of the vaccines have trace amounts of thimerosal in them, maybe 1 microgram or less. But the big bolus doses have definitely been taken out of the vaccines out of the pediatric vaccines, the big, like the 12 and 25 micrograms that were in the hepatitis B vaccine and the rest of the pediatric vaccine schedule has been removed. But there are, as what she's saying is correct, there are still very, very small amounts, trace amounts of thimerosal in some of the other vaccines.
Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. You're on the air with Bobby Kennedy.
An honor to talk to you both. As usual, Tom, good show.
Thank you.
You answered part of my question earlier. It had to do with why not install a refrigeration protocol for some vaccines, if not all vaccines. But the single dose, I guess, is the way to go. And on the single dose, for people who are senior citizens on Medicare, are they required to take what they're given, or can they ask for a single dose, even if it's at a slightly higher price? And number two, part two of my question, can we remediate heavy mercury in human beings with chelation therapy, either the home version or the doctor office visit with the IV version of chelation therapy?
There are many, many anecdotal instances of people. In fact, trace amounts, the movie I was talking about is about a guy who got severe mercury poisoning and autism-like symptoms when he was 29 years old from a tetanus vaccine, and then got rid of it through, had a complete recovery from chelation. There are many, and there are children in that movie that also, where they show before and afters, where they, before and after chelation. I had a friend who is the COO of one of the biggest engineering companies in the country, who I advised to get, who had a severely autistic son who could not speak, and doctors told him he would never be able to speak again. I advised him to get chelation, and Dr. Hyman set him up with a physician who could do it. It takes sometimes years to completely chelate them. But that child has had a full recovery. And I was at a wedding this weekend, and I ran into this engineer, and he told me that his son is now in college, living on his own, and has a 4.1 average. And there are many, many anecdotal stories like that, but there hasn't been any study, any peer-reviewed scientific study of children. I don't believe it will work for, by any means, all autistic kids, but it does seem to have really good effects on some of them and miraculous impacts on a few. Unfortunately, the CDC won't study this, and the FDA won't fund any studies of it. So that whole area has been kind of shut down. We really should be studying it, but nobody is studying it because of the root denial that this has anything, that mercury has anything to do with these neurological
disorders. Right. If you're claiming there's no problem, then you don't research the cure. It's remarkable. Lisa in Wisconsin, listen to WCPT. I can't pronounce the name of your city. Lisa, what is it?
Oconomowoc.
Okay. You're on the air with Bobby.
Hi, Mr. Kennedy. I appreciate you coming on the program. I wanted to let you know I have one of these autistic kids, and we had actually filed our claim with the Vaccine Compensation Fund within the three-year period, the three-year window, back in 2001. My son was born in 1998. And because, you know, we desperately wanted to find out what had happened to him, and we had an infant that was younger than him, and we wanted to make sure there was no, you know, there wasn't going to be any overlap, we had done extensive genetic testing. We took our son to the Cleveland Clinic and had a mitochondrial biopsy. And anyway, after the Supreme Court of the United States basically said that manufacturers are not liable for any vaccine, any deaths or damages due to vaccines, we were contacted by our attorney about a year and a half ago, who sent us a letter stating that there was no point in going on with the Vaccine Compensation Fund, and she requested that we drop our case. So we signed off on the letter and sent it back. Is there anything that can be done now that all of this is starting to come back out again? Is there anything that we can do? Because we did have a case that sat in the courts for over 10 years.
I don't know. You know, I know there's a terrific vaccine attorney called Bob Krakow, who is in New York, K-R-A-K-O-W, and he specializes in the vaccine courts. vaccine court is a kangaroo court. It's really a very strange hybrid. There's no discovery allowed. The attorney's fees are severely limited, so you're not getting involvement of the bar. So they've disabled essentially the bar because you can't sue the vaccine makers. They're completely immune, and the money is coming from this, you know, from the federal government, from taxpayers. So it's not a satisfactory process to the parents who have vaccine injured children, and you know that's really all what I would say is that you should continue to to consult maybe some other attorneys, but it has been a very, very tough process. It's odd too, Tom. I would say this, the Seventh Amendment says that no American shall be deprived the right of a jury trial, for matters that involve more than $25 in controversy. So the Supreme Court nevertheless allowed these vaccine court legislation to occur, even though there's no jury. You're with a government attorney, a government judge, and no discovery. You can't sue the guy who hurt you. And it's a very, very strange subversion of our constitutional right to jury trial. And I think it's very bad for the program, because the vaccine program, because it's given an immunity that has put all of these companies beyond any kind of accountability. Normally you'd have a check and balance where you'd have the plaintiff's bar who would say, wait a second, you shouldn't be putting aluminum, you shouldn't be putting mercury in these vaccines. You can do single dose. You know, why are you doing the multiple dose when it's potentially causing these injuries? And sue them, and they would quickly stop doing that and look for safer methods of doing it. You'd have a much more transparent process. But
are they using thimerosal because it's cheap?
Yeah, it's cheaper. The multi-dose vials are cheaper than the single-dose vials.
But why not use something less toxic than thimerosal as a preservative?
Well, there are alternatives for them. But, the best thing to do would be just to not put anything more in the vaccines and to use single-dose.
Right, yeah. Purify the stuff.
You know, they did it with all the pediatric vaccines, so nobody's arguing that it can't be done.
Right. Okay.
One last thing I'd say is that we took it out in America, but we're still giving this to children all over the world in all their pediatric vaccines.
Oh, my God. Bobby Kennedy, Jr., Ring of Fire Radio. You can find the article. Check it out. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
RingofFireRadio.com. Bobby's new article is up there. There's a link to it over at TomHartman.com. And his book, Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak. Bobby, you're still with us?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Hey,
we've got
Tom,
a bunch.
Thanks so much for doing that.
Oh, my pleasure. We've got some Free Speech TV callers who are on the air here who have questions for you. And then in 4 minutes, we've got to bail and pick up talk radio news. But you want to take a couple more calls here from Free Speech TV viewers? Okay,
sure.
Great. Esteban in Marshall, Virginia, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. You're on the air with Bobby Kennedy.
Hello, Tom and Bobby. I'm wondering if Bobby knows of any safety issues with the metal that's in dental fillings.
The metal, which is in, there's mercury in many dental fillings, and it off-gasses, particularly when you drink a hot drink like coffee. So, and it's the single largest deposits of mercury in America, I understand. Are the mercury in people's fillings. A few years ago, I had high mercury levels, and they were causing me, that were 10 times what EPA considers safe. And they were causing me some impacts, not major impacts, like I've seen with people who are very sensitive to it, which I'm not. But my levels were so high, I was getting some impacts from them, and I had my mercury fillings removed. Now,
same here.
It's against the law in most states for a dentist to tell you that your mercury-based fillings may be causing some problems. They'll lose their license if they tell you that. It's a very odd law. It seems to abridge some constitutional rights, but If you look it up, you'll find that it exists in virtually every state.
Amazing.
So your dentist will never tell you to remove your fillings because he'll lose his license if he does it.
Yeah.
But particularly if you have children, you should make sure that they, when their teeth get filled, when they get if they get cavities, that they're using non-mercury alternatives, which are out there.
Yeah, I had all the mercury taken out of my mouth maybe 15 years ago, and I swear I noticed a big difference. But again, there's placebo effect. One never knows, but it was. Lawrence in Berkeley. We still have about a minute and a half here. Lawrence, a quick one for Bobby?
Sure. Yeah, one of the big problems is that drug companies won't do the kind of basic research that is needed unless it's going to make them a huge profit with a profitable product. And at the same time, they're trying, through the Republicans, to cut down the budget of the National Institutes for Health and the CDC that do that research. And that's, to go from vaccines to antibiotics, we're losing our antibiotics because they're becoming immune.
Right. This is a big problem. Lawrence, we have only 40 seconds left. Let's let Bobby respond.
Well, that's a whole other issue that I'm not really an expert on. So, I don't think I should really comment on it because my expertise is really mercury. And, that in terms of the other vaccines and the other aspects of medicine, I just haven't done the kind of research to answer that question.
Well, I think his point was that that nobody's doing that basic research that might reveal something like this. Nobody's funding it.
Clearly right on the, issues, for example, Monsanto, one of the other, culprits in these, neurological, epidemics that we're having has been Roundup. And the material
right.
of that. And there's nobody out there who's going to research that.
Yeah, you're right. Bobby, you are doing God's work. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Thank you.
Always great talking with you. There's always an open door here for you. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour, let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and find out what's going on in the world. This news report with Victoria Jones brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Happy Friday. So what's going on in the world?
Well, President Obama is at Stanford today, where he is delivering remarks at a cybersecurity summit. He's also signing an executive order that aims to make it easier for the government to share classified cyber threat information with companies. And the idea is to spur collaboration and deter hackers. Now, the thing is, much of the order is going to remain voluntary for firms. And that is the limitation, people are saying, with this executive order. Many of the companies are wary of government involvement in how they protect themselves from computer attacks, but many of them have not been protecting themselves from computer attacks. Now, one significant part of the order would allow the Department of Homeland Security to approve classified information sharing arrangements, and DHS previously was not among the federal agencies that had that power. Experts are saying the change could be substantial because DHS is supposed to serve as the primary interface between the government and companies when it comes to sharing information about cyber threats. However, a lot could depend on whether agencies like the NSA and the CIA participate in any arrangement that allows classified information to be shared with companies. So there's a lot going on with this.
Wow. Now, did I read this in your newsletter or in the New York Times article that several of the largest Silicon Valley tech firms are boycotting this meeting that the president's at?
You read it in both.
Okay.
That's right.
What's the backstory there?
Well, Apple's Tim Cook is coming, but Facebook, Yahoo, and Google's execs are skipping the event. And it's being interpreted as evidence of frustration within Silicon Valley over NSA surveillance programs. Basically, the snooping programs rely on their wares. And some of the companies have been denouncing Obama's call for government backdoors in encrypted communication technology like iPhones. that would allow the tracking of users by intelligence agencies. The Obama administration has very aggressively been going after iPhones and Google Android phones, saying, look, we know you want to encrypt your phones completely so that they're totally private, but we want a way in, to which iPhone's saying, if you have a way in, everybody has a way in. And they are lobbying like crazy to get a way into these phones.
Wow. Amazing.
It's a big fight.
Yeah. Okay. What else
is it? It's a big fight. Other things going on. Republicans held a ceremony this morning for their showpiece Keystone XL pipeline bill that was part celebration and part wake. Speaker John Boehner, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and other GOP lawmakers assembled in the Capitol at a formal enrollment ceremony. And basically what they did was they celebrated the Keystone XL pipeline bill, and they're going to delay sending it to President Obama to sign, even though it's passed, until after next week. They don't want him to sign it while they're off during their President's Day recess. They want to be around.
Wait a minute, they don't want him to veto it?
Well, they want it. They know he's going to veto it, but they want to be in D.C. when he does so they can cause a ruckus.
Ah, okay. Yeah, of course. Of course. Okay. So what else is up?
There is a new legislation being introduced in the Senate by Senator John Cornyn of Texas. It would allow gun owners to carry concealed weapons around the country. If they've got a concealed carry permit in their home state, they would be able to bring their firearms to any other state with concealed carry laws. Cornyn says it operates more or less like a driver's license. So, for example, if you have a driver's license in Texas, you can drive in New York and Utah and other places, subject to the laws of these states. He says it would eliminate some of the gotcha moments where people inadvertently cross state lines with guns they're legally allowed to carry in their home state. It's been endorsed by the NRA. However, Every Town for Gun Safety is saying it would allow states with the weakest gun laws to trump the reasonable judgments of other states.
Hmm.
Now, this law, or a very similar law to it, came close to passing in the Democratic-controlled Senate, and it may have a better chance this time around under the Republican majority.
Remarkable.
And clearly it will pass the House.
Yeah.
Newly elected Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, Democrat, imposed a moratorium on the death penalty in the state today.
Good on him.
Calling the current system of capital punishment error-prone, expensive, and anything but infallible. And he said the moratorium is going to remain in effect until he receives a report from a legislative commission that's been studying the topic for about 4 years. Now, the Pennsylvania District Attorneys Association is not taking this lying down. They say Wolf had no authority to impose the moratorium and calls it a misuse of the concept of a reprieve. He has rejected the decisions of juries that wrestled with the facts and the law before unanimously imposing the death penalty, they said.
Good on him. This is, what, three governors now in the last year and a half or so?
Yeah.
As I recall, Maryland, Illinois, and now
Pennsylvania.
Thank you.
The Ukrainian ceasefire, which is scheduled to come into effect at midnight on Saturday, nobody's particularly optimistic about it.
Mm.
Nevertheless, both sides seemed eager to shore up their positions ahead of the ceasefire. There's been quite a lot of fighting today, a lot of it concentrated in the rebel-held Donetsk area, as well as the strategic city of Debaltseve, I think that's how you pronounce it, which is a railway hub and is much prized for that reason.
Mm. So everybody's basically trying to stake out the...
Yes.
You know, this is where the 39th parallel is going to be once the treaty goes into effect.
Exactly. Troops. Exactly. Yeah.
Fascinating. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Free-Don.org. Thank you, Victoria. Have a great weekend.
Happy Valentine's Day.
And happy Valentine's Day to you, too. Thank you. We will be back with Senator Bernie Sanders, going to be with us in the next hour, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Stick around. Get your questions ready.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program, the hour that you have been waiting for 2 hours. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting with Senator Sanders. Senator, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It is always great to have you with us. So what's on your mind today? What's going on?
Well, there are a lot of things going on. Let me just tick them off. On Wednesday, we had a very interesting hearing on the in the Senate Budget Committee, and I'm the ranking member there. And that dealt with the issue of the Social Security Disability Program. I think, as many listeners know, Social Security has two major programs. The largest one by far is for older Americans. That's what most people think of when they think of Social Security. But there's another significant program that impacts about 11 million people, which is the program for people with disabilities. What is happening now is that next year there's going to be a shortfall in the disability fund. The fact that there's a shortfall in one or another funds is not unusual. It's happened 11 times in the last few decades. And what we have always done when there has been a shortfall is there's been a shift of money from one of the funds to the other funds, because all of the money comes from the same source, the 6.2% that people pay on their payroll tax. On the very first day of the House of Representatives meeting, when they began their new congressional session, the Republicans decided to do something a little bit differently. And they said, no, we're going to make it harder to shift money. And the result will be, if we don't shift the money, a 19% reduction in funds for people with disabilities in America. And that would be an absolute tragedy, because right now the average benefit for somebody in the disability program is a little bit less than $14,000. And if a 19% decrease took place, those people would be trying to live on $11,324. So imagine yourself as somebody who's paralyzed, somebody who's an amputee, somebody who has severe disability problems, trying to get by on less than $12,000 a year. It is, to say the least, very, very difficult. So what we are going to do is demand that the Congress do what the President has proposed, what has been done 11 times before, shift money from one of the funds, in this case the Older Americans Fund, the retirement fund, into the disability fund. But more importantly, we have to understand that Social Security today can pay out all benefits for the next 18 years and has a $2.8 trillion surplus in the Social Security Trust Fund. But we have got to extend that longer, and that is why we have to lift the cap, which is now on $118,000. You do that, we can extend the Social Security Trust Fund for decades more, and we can expand benefits, Tom, and that's something that we're going to work hard to try to do.
But, Senator, that would mean that people who make millions of dollars a year would have to pay the same payroll tax that ordinary working people do. Republicans would never go for that.
Well, you're probably right, given the fact that the Koch brothers and other billionaires largely finance what these guys do. It will be a tough fight, but I think that's what the American people want. What has happened in recent years, this is an interesting point that I was not fully aware of until recently, is when we talk about the massive level of income and wealth inequality in America, we say, well, yeah, wages have gone down for ordinary Americans. More people are living in poverty, and the rich are getting much richer. That's not good. But what people don't realize, this has significantly impacted Social Security as well. If we had the same distribution of income today that we had in 1983, Social Security would have more than $1 trillion in there, $1 trillion more in the trust fund, would pay out benefits for another 20 years on top of the 18 we already have.
Wow.
So what's happened, which you can understand, if somebody under normal circumstances, economic growth, had seen their income, say, go from $50,000 to $65,000, that means they're contributing more into the Social Security Trust Fund.
Right.
But if their incomes went over a period of years from $50,000 to $48,000, they're not contributing more. Furthermore, as the rich get richer, many of them go on top of the maximum taxability level, which is now at $118,000, and they're not contributing more into the system. The result is the Social Security has lost over $1 trillion in income, in revenue, which could pay out benefits for another 20 years. It's an interesting point.
Amazing. All because of Reaganomics.
Yeah.
What else?
The other issue that's, I think, on people's mind, and by the way, the president was absolutely right in his budget. He said, look, let's do what's done 11 times. Not a big deal. It's never been controversial. We'll just shift money from one fund to the other, and that's that. But that's not where the Republicans appear to be coming from. Now, another issue where I don't agree with the president on is this issue of authorization for the utilization of military force dealing with ISIS. And on that issue, let me be very brief and very clear. I think we all know who ISIS is, and we know the horrors that they have brought about in their region and against foreigners, including a number of Americans, and their atrocities are literally unspeakable, and they have to be defeated. But I must tell you that when you look back at the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, wars which were supposed to be short, were supposed to not cost us many casualties, not be terribly expensive, what we learn when we think back is those wars have cost us close to 7,000 brave men and women who lost their lives, cost us hundreds of thousands of men and women in the armed forces who came home with PTSD and TBI, and will end up costing us between $3 and $6 trillion, thousands of dollars for every family in America. And those are and what I worry about is when the president brings forth a resolution, and the key section of the resolution, Tom, is the following. This is section 2C, limitations. The authority granted in subsection A does not authorize the use of the United States Armed Forces in enduring offensive ground combat operations. Enduring offensive ground combat operations. Well, you tell me what you think about that, Tom.
It sounds like pretty vague language.
It's a pretty much of an open door.
Yeah.
I mean, what is enduring offensive ground operations? Is enduring 10 years, 50 years, 500 years? What is it?
Right.
And here's the concern that I have. There are some people in the Congress who really don't stay up nights worrying about health care. They don't worry about the collapsing middle class. They don't worry about the high cost of college education. They don't worry about poverty. They're really into war. And there are a lot of these guys whose emphasis is, you know, into war. And I am very nervous about the United States getting involved in what appears to me almost a never-ending war in the Middle East. And you can get sucked into it, and you can stay. I mean, we've been there for 12, 13 years. You can stay there for another 20 years. And here's the other point that worries me and that bothers me. The countries in the region, the countries most impacted by ISIS, in fact, the countries that the governments that ISIS wants to destroy are Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Jordan, and all of these countries are run by very wealthy, multi-billionaire families. In fact, it's interesting. We just learned the other day. This is really interesting. Saudi Arabia has now the third largest defense budget in the world. How's that?
Wow. Between behind what, us and Russia or us and China? Or?
Not sure.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But it's ahead of the UK and ahead of France.
Wow.
Now, don't you think that maybe that with the third largest military budget, they can get their hands dirty, get their troops into the field, start using their air force, and play a vigorous role? We should be supportive, but we should not be leading that effort, in my view.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. More right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Senator Sanders' website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz. You can hop over to Facebook. He's got a very active Facebook presence as well. And welcome back. Senator, you want to take some calls?
Let's do it.
Okay. Tom, in Salinas, California, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Is this me?
This is you, Tom.
Yeah, okay. Pleased to see you both here. Appreciate both of your work. My question for Senator Sanders is, what would it take for you to run on an independent ticket rather than to try and gain endorsement from the Democratic Party?
Well, you don't, Tom, as I think a number of the listeners know, I am giving thought to running for president. That's not an easy decision, and I'm talking to people all over the country and trying to ascertain whether there is the grassroots and financial support for a campaign which would take on the billionaire class and the Koch brothers and Wall Street and the insurance companies and the drug companies and most powerful people in this country. So I'm trying to ascertain that. And one of the things that I have been thinking about is whether one runs as an independent. I have always won office as an independent, or whether you run within the Democratic caucus. It's not a question of being endorsed by the Democrats. You can run in the Democratic caucus. And the pluses and the minuses are that when you run as an independent, and the appealing aspect of that is a lot of people no longer have faith in either the Democratic or Republican Party, and that's appealing. The negative of that is trying to get on the ballot in 50 states as an independent outside of the two-party system ain't so easy, and you have to spend a lot of time and money to do that, and essentially have to build a kind of strong political organization. And there is a question about how the media would respond to you if you were not involved in debates and so forth. So it is an issue that I am wrestling with. But what we are trying to ascertain right now is, I know that there is a lot of support for the ideas that many of us believe in. And that is that the growing income and wealth inequality, today 99% of all new income being generated goes to the top 1%. You have the top 0.1% owning more wealth than the bottom 90%. And most people in this country say, that is crazy. You know, that's not what America is supposed to be. Only country in the industrialized world without a health care program guaranteeing health care to all people. A trade policy, which is losing us, you know, millions of jobs over a period of years. So I think we have the issues. But the question is, you know, when you're taking on establishment politicians, it really is not so easy to do that. And, you know, you got a media that's not particularly interested in the things that we, you know, talk about, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm giving thought to doing it. I'm giving thought about which approach is better. But a lot of it hinges on whether we can raise we can put together the organization and the financial support to run a strong and winning campaign. But thanks for your interest, Tom.
Yeah, it's very good. We just have 30 seconds till the break, Senator. The issues that you're talking about are, they all poll over 50% with all
Well over 50%, Tom. No, it's not a, look, this is what's crazy about America. If you go to grassroots America, you go down on the street corner of any city or town in America, you know what, there's pretty good consensus. Not 100%, but a lot of people understand that the middle class has been squeezed and that we need policies to protect the middle class and not the top 1%. That's a fact.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be back with more of your calls for the Senator right after this. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is our Brunch with Bernie hour. Yeah, we're doing it in the third hour of our show rather than the first. So, but we are live with Senator Sanders. And John in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Tom. Senator Sanders. Senator Sanders, in your capacity on the Veterans Affairs Committee, I get my health care at the VA. And just parenthetically, I'd like to say I wish we could just expand that system to cover everybody. But invariably, when I go in for an appointment, Fox News is on the TV ranting, you know, about the president. I was in a waiting room recently, and they were ranting about Obamacare. And, you know, the discussion in the room came up about socialized medicine and everybody ranting about socialized medicine. And here we are sitting in a VA waiting room. And I just, you know, it baffles me that I cannot stand it. You know, I have a visceral reaction when I'm in the presence of Fox News. And the other day I was in a waiting room. And that Megyn Kelly was going on and on about Benghazi. You know, I mean, do I have to be subjected to this?
Well, that's a good point. This was in the waiting room of the VA. Is that what you think?
Invariably, in any clinic.
Yep. Well, first of all, John, thanks very much. Thanks for your service, and thanks for your comments, and I agree with them. Just a couple of points. It goes without saying that if you read what the Koch brothers, who are going to spend close to $1 billion in the coming election, what they believe is they believe in ending Social Security, ending Medicare, ending Medicaid, ending the Veterans Administration, ending the Postal Service. By and large, they just don't believe that government has any role in our lives, and all power should go to the rich and the powerful. And that's, in one sentence, what these guys really believe, and they are now the most powerful political entity in America. So what you have and have had, and I speak as the former chairman of the Veterans Committee, is just huge attacks against the VA. And why? Because, as John indicated, the VA is a government-run healthcare system, and in fact is a socialized healthcare system. Is the VA perfect? No, far from it. Is American healthcare in general perfect? Very far from it. But by and large, if you talk to most veterans, they will tell you that in general, once you get into the system, VA provides pretty good quality health care. That's what the service organizations, American Legion, the DAV, the VFW, the Vietnam Vets, and all of the major veterans organizations will tell you, yeah, it's pretty good care, pretty good care. Many of the people who work in the VA are veterans themselves or related to veterans, and they take their job pretty seriously. So I'm not here to, you know, say it's perfect. It's not. There are 151 VA medical centers. Some of them are great. Some of them may not be as good. But in general, as John indicates, the care is pretty good. And what people should understand, that this attack, what John said, reminds me of something that I literally heard with my own ears, and that is people say, get the government off of my Medicare, which happens to be a government program. But there has been so much anti-government rhetoric, you know, funded by the Koch brothers and right-wing Republicans, that it's important for us to remind people, if you're a veteran, you're getting care in the VA. You know what? That is government-sponsored care. That happens to be socialized health care, pretty good care, and so forth.
John in Cayucos, California, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator. Hello, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, both of you. I have a question for the senator. Tell me if I'm crazy or not, but I was just playing around with some numbers yesterday, and I kind of simplified it, and I don't want to get all wonky on the phone. But can't we frame this whole Social Security issue and disability issue, if we were to propose it as a tax cut, if we can move the get rid of the cap altogether, move it to infinity, and lower the actual rate that the employer and the employee pay. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the number is. Someone has to figure this out. 2 or 3% maybe for each. So it's a huge tax cut for the worker and the employer. Couldn't we lower it to whatever it needs to be, include everyone to pay in,
and maybe we can get some Republicans on board, at least get the conversation moving.
Well, John, that is one of the that is not a crazy idea. It's certainly an idea that some people have talked about. What John is referring to is the fact that right now every worker in America and every employer in America pays 6.2% of their income. The worker pays 6.2, and the employer matches that. What John is suggesting is what happens if you lower that 6.2 to 4%, which would be a significant tax reduction. You lifted the cap, which is now at $118,000. What that means is somebody making $20 million contributes the same amount as somebody making $118,000. So John says, lift the cap, go all the way up. You're going to bring more revenue in, despite the fact you've actually lowered taxes for the vast majority of working people. It is not a crazy idea. But here's what we're trying to wrestle with, John, is to come up with a formulation that does a couple of things. Number one, it brings in enough revenue to extend the life of Social Security, which today is 18 years, to 50 years or 60 years. Number two, what we also want to do is expand benefits, because you got a lot of people who are getting minimal Social Security benefits who are hurting. And you got to determine then, if you want to do those goals, extend Social Security for decades more, expand benefits, how much money do you need, and how do you go about doing it? Lifting the cap is obviously the key part of this whole equation. Whether you can afford to actually lower taxes, well, maybe you can, maybe you can't, but it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Just 4 seconds. Okay. Yeah, Senator, you are timing these things just right here today. I appreciate it. Okay. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. We'll be back with more of your calls for Bernie right after this. We've got a news break here at the bottom of the hour, but stick around. And be sure to check out Senator Sanders' website, sanders.senate.gov. It is a great news source. You can sign up for his newsletter, the Bernie Buzz, there. I just got a copy in my email this morning, as a matter of fact. And also you can check out what he's doing over at Facebook.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Once again, that website is sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. We're doing it in the third hour of our show today instead of the first. We are live. Senator Sanders on the phone with us. And, Senator, you're still here with us?
I am right here, Tom.
Okay, great. Let's pick up some more phone calls here. Keith in Landrum, South Carolina. You are on the air, Senator Sanders. Keith.
Hey, Senator. My question is about the FCC Title II decision, which I support immensely, and the Internet Tax Freedom Act, which prohibits fees or taxes to be applied for states and cities. Is there any reason why we don't add to that legislation to prevent FCC from adding fees to Internet access as well?
Well, Keith, I'm not sure that I agree with you on at least one point here. In my state of Vermont, there is a real problem that we got a lot of small businesses who have to charge the taxes onto their products that they sell are at a disadvantage with those folks who are selling it on the Internet. So if we're serious about protecting small businesses and downtowns throughout this country, I think that that is not a fair proposal. So I'm not quite sympathetic to where you're coming from on that one.
Yeah, you could call it the Amazon loophole, right? It's remarkable. Jim, in Lockport, Illinois, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Tom, and Senator Sanders. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Senator Sanders, on the authorization to use military force, I think we might be a little bit, at least I know on my behalf, I kind of tend with the Republicans on this a little bit, because any warfare or battle is a fluid action. And I think we should give him as much, space as possible to react. But the president has also said many times he doesn't want troops on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think we should put our trust in the president that even if we do give him the authorization to use it, that he won't?
Well, Jim, fair enough. You make a good point. And I do believe the president has said that he does not want to see troops on the ground. And the president, I think, is trying his hardest
to make sure that that happens. The problem here is, and I also agree with you, that certainly the commander-in-chief needs a lot of flexibility to fight an organization like ISIS. The problem that I have is twofold. This is a three-year authorization. It sunsets at the end of 3 years, so Obama will not be president at the end of in the third year. We don't know what the new president might or might not do. But second of all, there is a lot of pressure in this country by some of my colleagues in the Congress to get troops on the ground. And the president could be pressured in that direction. So I think that the door is just a little bit too wide, or much too wide for me, because essentially this gives the president the authority to do pretty much what he wants, and I do not want to see American troops and taxpayers forced to engage in another major war in the Middle East. And as I mentioned earlier, what really bothers me is at the end of the day, I don't think the United States or the UK or France wins this war. This is a war for the soul of Islam, and it is only going to be the Muslim nations themselves who are going to win this war. And I mentioned earlier that Saudi Arabia has the third largest military budget in the entire world. Where are their ground troops? Where are is their Air Force? Their Air Force is engaged now, but not as significantly as it should be. If you have the third largest military budget in the world, you should be mopping up ISIS. That's what you should be doing. And the United States and other countries can and should be supportive. I support the president's effort on air attacks, and I support special operations forces to do what has to be done in given circumstances. But my nightmare is, and I think people should think carefully about this, is a never-ending war in the Middle East. It can go on and on and on. Billions of dollars, more loss of life, more men and women coming home with all kinds of problems. So I think the burden of this war should rest with the Middle East countries. God knows they have enough money to wage it. They have the manpower to wage it. It cannot always be the United States of America. Jim, that's my view on that, but I respect your point of view.
Don in Wheaton, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, hi. I know you guys have talked a lot about this, but to me it seems like it's probably the one most important thing, and that is to get the money out of politics. And the important thing, I think, is to get that as a question on the next ballot. And I apologize for not getting this in before the last ballots were printed, but I think, you know, we had such luck in getting the progressive ideas on the ballot before in this last election that maybe if we at least get the ball rolling and ask the American public and lay it all out why they should back up getting the money out of politics, maybe...
Roll back Citizens United, you mean, Don?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
okay.
I think Don hits the nail on the head. Tom, if you were to ask me, I mean, all of the issues that are out there, the decline of the American middle class, many people without health care, income and wealth inequality, climate change, the unaffordability of college education, on and on and on. You know what the most important issue is? And the issue that impacts all of the others is money in politics. Mm-hmm. And Don is absolutely right. We are living in a situation. I was in the last weekend. I gave a speech in Pennsylvania. And as we drove back to Washington, I went through Gettysburg and I stopped at some of the monuments honoring the soldiers from Vermont who had played a very, very important role in the Battle of Gettysburg. And while I was there, I just read from one of the monuments. That's, of course, where Lincoln gave his famous Gettysburg Address. And he talked about a new birth of freedom and his view, his vision of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Wow, what a vision. And I thought hard. It really hit me as we were driving back to Washington, where we are today. And today we are literally, not figuratively, literally a government of the billionaires, by the billionaires, and for the billionaires. That's where we are. And what Don is basically saying, I think, if I don't want to misinterpret him, but that this is the key issue. Now, the good news here is I believe we have some 17 states which have gone on record in saying We support a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. You've got hundreds of cities, big and small. I think at large cities, and I know you got a lot of towns in the state of Vermont, all of them, many, many hundreds, who said we have to overturn Citizens United. But people should know, the Koch brothers have already said that they plan to spend just this one family, second wealthiest family in America, as much money as Obama or Romney spent in the last campaign. One family. And I'm not sure they may not end up spending more because they have huge amounts of money. That is not what American democracy is supposed to be about. We're not supposed to be about billionaires buying elections. And that's exactly where we are today. So Don's point is absolutely right. In any and every way, getting this issue on the ballot, organizing to overturn Citizens United, in my view, moving toward public funding of elections, nothing more important than that. In fact, I think it's fair to say the future of democracy depends upon our success in this issue.
Jeff in Asheville, North Carolina, listening on 880 AM. Jeff, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just fine.
Okay, well, thanks you both for your work. Okay, we've heard a lot about the low voter turnout and what can Democrats do to rally the base in 2016. I've got a couple of comments and a question. The first point is the voter turnout. The last cycle wasn't an election, it was a buyout. As Tom has said before, proof that money will buy elections. This is not democracy. Second, Senator Boehner, his invitation to Netanyahu to address a joint session of Congress, that's an outrage. It's an insult to the president. It's subversive to the system. But moreover, you know, it's an announcement to the world that the governments may sidestep the president and deal directly with the Republicans, the power brokers, with the people with big bucks behind them. And it's obvious that they want to see the president marginalized to support their claim in 2016 that he and the Democrats are ineffective and off base on foreign policy and every other type of policy.
Jeff, what's your question for the senator?
Right. I was hoping you wouldn't ask that, Tom.
Oh, that's okay. I could take it from there.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot.
I agree with you on both of your points. I have to say this again. You know, Jeff talked about the election, or maybe paraphrasing you, Tom, as a buyout. And you ain't seen nothing yet. These guys own the economy now, and now they want to own and buy the United States government. And for them, a few of the Koch brothers, I think the latest number I saw for the Kochs is they're worth something like $100 billion. Their wealth is skyrocketing. Spending a few billion dollars on a campaign is like, you know, you and your wife going out for dinner and spending $50 or $100. It's not a lot of money for them. What's $1 billion when you're worth $100 billion? They're about to buy the United States government. They're not alone. You got Sheldon Adelson out there. I think everybody should be outraged that a couple of months ago, many of the Republican candidates went to a meeting with the Koch brothers, and these guys are deciding who they will spend huge amounts of money on. This is not in any way, shape, or form American democracy. Jeff raises the issue of Speaker Boehner inviting Prime Minister Netanyahu to a joint session of the Congress. And I share his concern. The President of the United States leads us on foreign policy. And not to consult the President about inviting a Prime Minister is clearly unacceptable and a terrible precedent.
15 minutes before the hour, we'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can find a great news source over at Sanders.Senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz, Bernie's newsletter, and drop by Facebook and check out what he's up to. And welcome back. Let's see here. Free Speech TV. Patricia in Portage, Wisconsin. You are. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you. The Endangered Species Act is now being bypassed legislatively, and the courts are not going to be allowed to impose the Endangered Species Act if if Representative Ribble has his way with wolves. And it's a really dangerous precedent because we're going to have so many endangered species because half of the wildlife in the world is gone in the last 40 years. So there's a bill, H.R. 884, Senator Sanders, it's coming to the Senate. What can you do to block this going around the Endangered Species Act to take protections from our endangered species? This is serious.
Well, Patricia, it is serious. I am supportive of where you're coming from. I think what we have seen in recent decades is, and I think climate change has played a very significant role, especially for sea life. But in general, we are seeing real serious problems for many species in this world. And you think about, you know, the role of nature and the balance of nature and how everything relates to everything else, and the morality of just seeing beautiful species of animal life or fish life, marine life being ended. It is a terrible thing. I am on the Environmental Committee, Patricia, and I am more than aware that there are many Republicans who, you know, would just as soon end the protection of endangered species, but we will fight back as effectively as we can.
Gene in Florissant, Missouri. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator. I just read in the St. Louis Labor Tribune yesterday that the post office in Hazelwood, Missouri, which is north of St. Louis, is had its shifts cut in half. They've got 3 or 4 days backlog in mail and packages. All the routes for the mailmen have been all screwed up. What's going on with the post office? Are we going to be able to save the post office? Or
Gene, this is an issue I have been working on for years, and we've had some success and some failures. Right now, and it didn't get a whole lot of attention. As a result of Bush's initiative in 2006, the post office is stuck with a $5.5 billion a year mandate to put money into their retiree health insurance program. And every year, therefore, they've been technically running a deficit, despite the fact that their operating expenses are positive. To make a long story short, what we're looking at right now and for the last few weeks has been a reduction in mail delivery standards, i.e., what the post office is now saying, that mail is going to be delivered significantly slower than it used to be. Their next step is to try to shut down 82 processing plants all over the country, reducing their workforce by about 15,000 employees. This is something that some of us are working very, very, very hard to try to reverse. So to answer your question, yes, Gene, we are more than cognizant of it. It is a disaster, and we're trying to fight back.
We'll be back with more of your questions for Senator Sanders right after this. 10 minutes before the hour. And as we always do in the last hour, the last segment of the last hour, the last day of the week, our thank yous for the week. Thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the folks at the various organizations that syndicate this program, Westwood One on commercial radio, Pacifica on non-commercial radio, Sirius XM satellite radio across the country, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV carried on Dish Network and DirecTV, all the cable providers that carry our show like Manhattan Neighborhood Networks and all the others around the country, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV who work on The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio, to our newsletter editors, Sue Nethercutt, and the folks in our chat room, to Alan Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service who works with us, Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support. Thank you to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. And thank you to Senator Sanders for showing up every Friday for 10 years now. Senator, thank you so much, too.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tom.
So back to the calls. Steve, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Senator Sanders, I'm really curious because recently I've been reading a lot about the Republicans fury, I guess you could say, over the Democrats staying together and filibuster and everything. And there's been a lot of rumbling that they're talking about actually removing the filibuster from the Senate. Do you think they're going to actually go that far?
Well, that is a good question. I think what the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, has said at this point that they won't. They won't do that. I think if they do that, they would probably find themselves getting virtually all of their legislation that they would shove through the Congress vetoed. You know, and I find it, you know, a little bit ironic that this is what, and I don't know that, frankly, I don't think the Republican leadership in the Senate has been talking about it. You got some guys in the House have been talking about it. But this is a group of people who, when they were in the minority, were the most obstructionist people of any minority in the modern history of the United States Senate. And they used the rules in every way that they could to obstruct an agenda which worked for working people. And, you know, now they're finding themselves in the majority having to deal with that reality. But my guess is no, I don't think that they will change the rules.
Denise in Chicago, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, thank you so much. I'm honored to speak with you, Senator Bernie Sanders. I listen to Tom very much because I want to keep educated. I listen to you very much because you're fighting so hard. Here's my comment, and I'll get off the line. I listen every day, and every day I get more worried and concerned and scared. Nothing seems to be happening. All the things that are on your shoulders were so immense. Everybody's talking to each other, but nothing when you turn the TV on or you listen to any progress. Nothing seems to be happening. How do we keep our faith and move forward in this country knowing that these awful things that are going on will be turned around? But thank you for your time, and again, it's an honor to speak with you.
Well, Denise, thank you very much. I think, look, no one can argue that if you take a hard look at what's going on in our country, where so many middle-class and working families are hurting, where unemployment, real unemployment is much too high, where seniors are struggling to put food on the table and buy their medicine and heat their homes, there are real, real problems. But what I would say to Denise is that, you know, this is not the first time in the history of this country where we face very difficult problems. And I'm just thinking back, and everybody can, the degree to which this country has overcome racism, elected an African-American president of the United States, something that nobody thought would happen as early as 2008, the degree that we've overcome or are moving to overcome sexism. You know, 30, 40 years ago, we had very few elected women who were elected officials. Women were marginalized from the kind of work that they can do. Huge breakthrough. Do we have more to do? Sure we do. But we have, in terms of breaking down gender barriers in this country, just tremendous progress. In terms of how we deal with people with, treat people with disabilities, huge progress. In terms of gay rights, just gigantic progress. So I'm not going to argue with Denise when you look at what's going on in this country economically, just overwhelming problems for working people, no question about it. But I think we cannot allow ourselves to fall into despair and to think that nothing can happen. Our opponents are very powerful. They have unlimited sums of money. But I think on all of the issues that we believe in, you know, the right for working people to live with dignity, to have decent wages, to have health care, for our people to have education, that there be a much fairer distribution of wealth and income. Vast majority of the people agree with us. And our job is to educate, it's to organize, it's to mobilize people, and we just cannot give in to despair. So, Denise, thanks very much, and you just keep your chin up.
And for what it's worth, my experience has been that the best antidote to despair is action, to get out and do something.
That's
Senator,
what,
we have...
You roll your sleeves up and you get into it, you end up feeling a little bit more hopeful about the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. We have just a minute left. Your thoughts for the week?
Well, it's, you know, my thoughts are that, as Denise just said, this country faces probably a greater set of problems than any time since the Depression. And if you throw in the issue of climate change, and by the way, this is the piece in the Washington Post reporting on a study done by NASA and I think Columbia University and Cornell University talking about the possibility of a major drought in the southwestern part of this country in the last 50 years of this century. And climate change looms out there as an enormous problem. But what our job has got to be, and our efforts have got to work toward, creating a government which represents the vast majority of the people rather than the just the very wealthiest and most powerful. And once we do that, I think we can effectively address a lot of the problems we've been talking about.
Senator, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
And for the great work you do. And everybody, thank you for being with us for these 3 hours. Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require your participation. Get out there, get active, do something, join something. Check out some of those great organizations that are really doing good work out there. Tag, you're it, and have a great weekend. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.